Welcome and welcome back to Leaders in Conversation with me, Annie Townend, the podcast that helps you to grow confidence, care and courage in your leadership. I created this series of candid conversations for leaders to share their inspirational personal leadership stories, weaving together the threads of their life, the people, places and experiences that have made them who they are today. Together we delve into what they really care about, their values and beliefs, their passion and purpose, and weaving them into their everyday life. If you haven't already, please do subscribe, listen, and share the podcast. Thank you for listening. Today, I'm delighted to be in conversation with Julian Roberts. The title of our podcast is The Secrets Behind Building Resilience in Leadership, something that Julian knows a lot about as an executive business coach and a podcast host himself of helping organizations thrive. Together, we delve into why the need for resilience in leadership in today's workplace is greater than ever, how to create a resilient mindset to lead your team and organization, and finally, how to create resilient teams that are better equipped to navigate challenges and to truly thrive in an ever-changing environment. Welcome, Julian.
Thank you, Annie. What a wonderful introduction. Much appreciated.
I'm delighted to reciprocate by having you as a guest on my podcast, having been one on yours some time ago and thoroughly enjoyed being in conversation with you then. And I'm very excited to be in conversation with you today. I would like to start by asking you about you. About who are the people, the places and the experiences that have made you you and made resilience such an important part of who you are?
Yeah, thank you for that. And it's an interesting question. I think back to when I was 16, I had a motorbike accident where I had a broken leg, a smashed up kneecap. In fact, my kneecap got taken out. And so it created real impact in terms of me bending my knee. And I remember my physio telling me, you probably won't be able to run because I couldn't bend my knee more than 90 degrees. And I thought I wasn't going to accept that because I wanted to run. I wanted to be able to do the things that I could do before. Now I can run, I can go to 90 degrees. And I think I've always had that mindset that, you know, you get a challenge. Okay, how do I navigate this? How do I overcome it? How do I be agile in dealing with this challenge? And I think that's what resilience is about. We're all faced with difficulties. Whoever you are, you'll get uncertainty in your life. You'll get failure. You'll get change. You get things that will get in your way. And it's not a personal thing. It's just life. And I think we need to be able to overcome that and navigate it. As I went through my career and as a leader in organization, I started to do the same and figure that out. But I also got into the world of endurance sports. I did ultra marathons. I did Ironmans. And again, trying to push myself a little bit, but push my mind more than anything else. And just that ability when things are really difficult and it's the hottest day in the year and you're doing an Ironman and you've done the swim, the bike, and you've got 26 miles to run and it's horrendous. And just be able to keep going and have those mindset hacks that to enable you to do that. It pushes you to the boundaries of what you can do. And that relates into personal life as well as your professional life. And as I became an executive coach about 6 years ago, I started to understand what was important with leaders. And I always felt that resilience was really important as a leader for high performance, for dealing with life, for dealing with teams and organizations and challenges. That's where my passion is, and I absolutely love it. And I believe it's something that we can develop and grow. It's not about some people are more resilient than others. It's a complete fallacy. I believe you can actually develop resilience and get even more resilience day by day.
That's good to hear that resilience is something that we can develop and grow, a bit like a muscle. We can flex it and get better at it. What from your early childhood, you said you had the accident when you were 16, the motorbike accident. What do you think helped you, prepared you to be able to develop a resilient mindset around what happened to you at that time?
I grew up in a not dysfunctional family, but certainly challenged family. And it's interesting because I'm a foster carer now, and I see elements. I wasn't in foster care, but I see elements in my foster daughter in terms of some of the things that I perhaps have had growing up. I think up to the age of 16, we'd moved house 13 times due to various circumstances, which I think there's a negative to that, clearly, because you don't build friendships, you don't build roots, and it's all very fleeting and very unstable. But the positive to that is that I became far more agile, far more fleet of foot on challenges and changes in life. And so change to me was almost pretty consistent. And so I think there was a positive, which enabled me to probably be more resilient in that as well. So I think that, in a bizarre way, helped me create that sort of mindset, because I was probably faced with quite a lot of family challenges growing up.
Is that something in developing a resilient mindset that you would encourage listeners to do, and how to do it, Julian? How do we develop that resilient mindset that is able to push through without having had the experiences perhaps that shaped you and made you you and enabled you in a way to overcome, push through, and go beyond what you'd been told would be a limit? You went beyond the limit.
It's often a scenario where people feel that it's all about grit and determination. And there's elements of that in resilience. And I think that can create a toxicity to resilience as well. You just got to carry on, just got to keep pressing through. And there's elements of that. And that, to me, is important. And how you get that grit and determination, for me, when I talk to leaders and organizations, is getting this real clarity in your purpose, or purpose of the organization, or purpose of yourself. Because when the chips are down and when it's really difficult, your purpose is your guiding, your North Star, your place of motivation. And I remember I coached a lady who came to me for coaching for mental toughness, mental resilience. And she wanted to run 7 marathons in 7 days on 7 continents, which is quite a feat in itself, just for the logistics, sleeping, or everything else. And one of the things we talked about was understanding her purpose. And her purpose, she was a mental health ambassador. She tried to kill herself many years ago. And she now goes out doing these events to talk about mental health and helping other people. That's her thing. And so we really got clarity on that purpose. When she was having those tough moments, and she did have some really tough moments, that was her source. It wasn't about finishing. It wasn't about completing it. That's a very short-term motivator. It was actually the bigger picture, almost bigger than the actual events you're doing. And that's the same thing when you're going through a difficult time in a workplace or in your business. To go bigger than the challenge is to go to the purpose organization or yourself is a really good motivator. And I think I find that is one way of helping you to navigate and become more resilient as well.
Finding your purpose, I know for many leaders, can be in and of itself a big question. I often speak about it as finding out why you're here, finding out that bigger purpose. There being two questions, the who you are around values and beliefs, but also the purpose, the meaning that you give to what you do, the why you're here. When did you find your why, and how did you find it, Julian?
I found it quite, I would say, late in life. I was probably in my mid-40s, and this is just prior to me jumping from the corporate world into set up a consulting sort of practice. I was in a challenging workplace at the time, and also at the time my wife and I were looking to foster. And so those two worlds collided, and I wanted more flexibility, more independence to support my wife with fostering, but also I wanted to get away from the scenario I was in the workplace. So I reflected on my 20 years working in sales leadership and started to think about, where was I at my best? Where was I resonating? What was I really excited? What really made me feel really glow inside, so to speak? As much as I loved the sales side of things, what I did, and strategy and creating new routes to market in the companies I worked in, it was the people bit that really resonated me. And I look back and I think I had this ability to really spot talent. And I just thought that was just normal, that you, as a leader, you spot talent in people. And I was pretty good at it. And that's what really resonated with me. And I remember I was a commercial director for a company and I designed a competency model. I remember a HR person said, well, you should be in HR doing things like that. And I just had this thing about developing people. And so I realized actually what my passion really was, this unlocking human potential. And as I started to reflect upon that and start to question that and look for other insights, I started to think, actually, that's what I like doing. And that got me to the place of becoming an executive coach. I realized I had this passion and purpose to unlock human potential. And then the whole resilience piece came after that, creating resilient mindsets and cultures. I love helping people to become more resilient as well. Finding your purpose is not a one session, two sessions. It's a journey. It's a thing that develops and opens up as you walk into it. And I always say, look, you're not going to get possibly all of it in one go. It will just start to unravel. And that's the key thing. It starts to unravel and you start to test it and think, this is what I'm about.
Absolutely. That's a great way of describing it. And it is something which reveals itself over time through reflection, through conversation, through being helped in our teams, in our families, in our work, definitely. You chose to become a foster carer. You've mentioned your daughter and how you changed your life around living your purpose, both at home and work. Can you say more about that, Julian?
Now I look back, I think it's part of my purpose of unlocking human potential. We are in a place of creating an environment of enabling and empowering our daughter to thrive. And I think that's the difference. And that's what I do as a coach. And it reflects in everything I do. My birth children, the conversations I have with them, because I'm fascinated and interested. It's just what I love doing. I don't switch off. I am a dad, but I just still naturally ask those questions. And I suppose with foster care, the thing around that was giving a child an opportunity to be empowered, thrive, and hopefully unlock their potential. And we've seen that. We've been fostering for 4.5 years with one child, and it's long-term, which is brilliant. Yes, there is challenges with that. It's not all rose-tinted glasses and wonderful. There's moments when it's really great and moments when it's really hard and really tough. But it reflects in who I am and what I'm about. And again, ties in with that whole resilience piece as well and helping her to become more resilient. She's incredibly resilient already, but even more so to face challenges that she'll face in this big wide world.
Wonderful, helping her and helping your own children and the people with whom you work to become more resilient and thrive and to unlock their potential. Why more than ever is developing resilience in the workplace important and helping people to thrive? Why would you say now is a particularly important time for us as leaders to be doing just that?
I think we're in a time of absolute uncertainty. You just take the last 3.5 years with a pandemic, which is a major impact on all our lives, but even some of the outputs and the ramifications of that, and wars, and there's always been wars, but I just feel we're in a time of complete uncertainty. And there's a horrendous amount of challenges, whether that's from financial cost of living, inflation challenges, through to job security, a whole host of stuff. And I think more than ever, we need to be people that can face that and not just crumble and just fall apart and just think, oh my goodness, I can't cope with it. And I think there's so many challenges on our minds of all what we're exposed to from a digital point of view, a social media point of view. There's so many things vying for our attention as well that probably don't help. But it just feels for me, from my own just over 50 years old, the last 4 or 5 years have been incredibly challenging as a nation, as a human race, really.
And part of developing resilience in order to face those challenges is seeking support from within our teams and developing resilient teams, resilient families, developing resilience. When you're working with teams, Julian, how do you help teams develop greater resilience? You spoke earlier about the grit side of resilience, but I also heard you suggesting that there is a softer side to resilience as well. How do you get the both and of resilience, the grit and the softer side of it, into working with teams and teams working together?
Purpose underpins everything. That's your guiding light, your North Star, and that's wherever you are individually or a team, the purpose is really important because it's bigger than you are. I also think what resilience is about is more than just grit and determination. It's about when you fall down or when you get challenges or when you overcome a challenge, it's stopping and pausing and reflecting on what's happened and how did you overcome that and creating a learning loop. Because resilience is not just about pushing through a brick wall. Actually, I don't need to go through this brick wall because last time I learned, I got a ladder and I climbed over it. And so it's that learning piece. And that's why I think that the grit and determination can become a bit toxic. It's the piece about learning and every situation that you overcome. And that's why it is good to reflect on things. Go, okay, how did I overcome that? What did I learn from that? This is what I learned. And therefore, I'll do this next time when I face a similar challenge and move forward. So to create a learning environment, for me, it's all about creating this in a team context. Is a sort of psychological safety. Because psychological safety creates an environment where you can take a risk. So if you're trying something new to try and overcome a challenge, you've got to take a risk. You've never done it before. You've got to create an environment where you learn, and that takes time, and you might not get it right the first time. And you've got to be in an environment where you challenge, because your leader might say, I think we should overcome this challenge by doing this. And you think, well, actually, no, I think we should do this. And you've got to have the opportunity to be able to challenge in a respectful, kind way. And also, psychological safety also creates an environment where it's okay to fail or things not go as planned. And I think that environment enables you to be innovative, creative, agile, and to be resilient. That's how you have to be in that team context. If you create that within a team, you'll create lots of ways of working and solutions to overcome things and create an environment where people will become more resilient. And that's, to me, quite core, really, is that environment of what you're creating within your team.
One of the things that I certainly talk with leaders about is how do we create that safe environment in which everybody feels seen, heard, and understood. How do you create that safe environment, both at work, working with teams, but also you've created that in your family, creating an environment in which everyone can thrive. What are some of the things that help leaders to create a safe environment in which people can fail, can experience the learning loop?
The big one is to be a role model. Sounds really basic, sounds really obvious, but actually role modeling that context of psychological safety. So if you role model that it's okay to make a mistake. It doesn't mean you go around making mistakes, but actually owning up as a leader and say, look, I tried this to overcome this and it didn't work. This is what I learned. So you're creating this opportunity to reflect and learn. And this is what I want to do differently. And sharing those stories of how you do things. Also being a role model to step out of your comfort zone, step out, take that risk as a leader to challenge, but also to be seen to challenge your own sort of people above you in the context of your organization. I think role modeling is more powerful than we realize, and it really connects that psychological safe environment with a reality of you actually doing it as well. I encourage a lot of leaders, if you want to really have an impact on those around you, show it to them, demonstrate it through your actions. It's more powerful than just what you say and how you do it. Doesn't mean you get it right all the time. Doesn't mean you'll make mistakes. That's okay. That's fine. But just be open and transparent, and use opportunities where things have not gone quite right for you as an opportunity to share with your team and how you've learnt from it. And the more you do that, the more they'll start to do the same. And so that's one way. And another way, when people are taking those risks, make sure you get behind them, support them, encourage them. Because when somebody is taking a risk and pushing the boundaries, it's quite scary. It's quite unnerving. People appreciate your support. It doesn't mean you have to help them, but you have to empower them, give them the resources they need, and really back them, regardless of whatever the outcome is. And I think that's another important thing, is to really get behind your team, support them and encourage them and almost cheer them on in a sense. And if they do it, well done. If they don't, well done. You tried and have a go. What did you learn from that scenario? And that's the other thing, is they're encouraging people. You know, in those one-to-ones, that didn't quite work. So what did you learn? You know, what can you do different next time? This is all about creating empowering learning loops with people, and people start to understand a bit more. Don't tell them, just ask questions. And I think that's one way of creating that sort of psychological safety.
Absolutely. And that reminds me of the way in which I often talk about resilience is with confidence, because what you're talking about there is through the supporting and empowering of people, they feel more confident, they feel safe to take risks, and in turn, that develops resilience. I love your encouragement, Julian, for leaders to be role models, and that perhaps we don't make enough of that, but that it's really important through our behaviour to demonstrate that what we mean, we really truly mean. As we come to the close of our conversation, what other encouragements would you have around not only being a role model, leading by example, but also developing a resilient mindset, and what to have front of mind in the listener, the leader's mind?
If you want to inspire people and create people to become resilient, you've got to become a resilient leader yourself and develop those ways of you demonstrating that in your conversations or just by your actions. I think that's really important. Another way I mentioned earlier on in terms of developing resilience as an individual is creating daily habits. If you're looking to run a marathon, you don't just do running 3 or 4 times a week. The important thing to do is do strength and conditioning, which strengthens your core. And I believe daily habits really strengthen your core. And a couple of things I do is practice gratitude. And the reason I practice gratitude, what I love about gratitude, is that there's the physiological benefits that come with it. So when you are grateful for things, small things, big things, it doesn't have to be huge things, and people can journal things, which is really helpful as well, it actually releases dopamine and serotonin. And those sort of endorphins create that positive mindset. And you start to see the silver lining, you start to see the positive, you start to see the opportunities, and start to really help. And it's a good way to start the day with that. Reflection, I talked about reflection before, is important. That creates the learning loop of how you're going to do it differently next time, how you're going to learn and how you're going to adapt and be agile. And that's all about being resilient, is that agility and that learning and mindfulness. Because often when people get into a situation of challenge or scenario, you know, whether it's a big thing like a pandemic or a small thing, losing a client, for example, or something going wrong, we can panic and go into fight or flight, and our amygdala, our midbrain, goes into hyperactivity, and suddenly we make rash decisions, we're emotional, and it's not very helpful. And so mindfulness, doing mindful activity, meditation, yoga, various ways of accessing mindfulness, connects your prefrontal cortex more than your amygdala. And by being more prefrontal cortex, front part of your brain, you're more logical, you're more calm, you're less emotional, and therefore you make better decisions in that context. I do cold water immersion every day as well. So I go in every day in the morning and go into my cold water and sit there for 2 or 3 minutes. It was about 9 degrees this morning. And I find that what it does thing, you get a dopamine hit, you get a mindfulness that comes with that. But also what happens is, because I'm stressing my body with this cold water every day, I'm almost increasing my threshold for stress. So I need a higher stress to tip me over the edge to be stressed, so to speak. So work on things like that. And life's not about one thing that will fix it all. It's about consistently doing daily habits in a way that will help you perform and be more resilient.
What else, as a final encouragement, would you suggest to leaders and their teams to focus on?
For me, it's about resilient processes. I have 3, which is reduce, regulate, and repair. And so a reduced process is creating a mindset that says, okay, what if this all goes wrong? What would we do differently? How would we mitigate that? How would we mitigate that from a financial point of view, from a resource point of view? What it also does, if you do it as a team, when things happen and perhaps the thing that you'd worked out didn't quite happen, but something else happens, you have a process of how to work it out really quickly and come up with some strategies. And therefore, you overcome things quicker. So that's all about sort of reducing and creating standard operating procedures. And then regulate is about how you manage in a crisis, how you manage when you get challenges in terms of communication, transparency, check-ins with people, encouraging people, that sort of process of working that through and making sure people are on it. And this is where a lot of organizations and teams, I would say, fail on, is they don't repair. Where you've gone through a challenge, you've overcome it, and you do a debrief and go, okay, what did we learn? What do we need to do next time? What do we need to put in as standard operating procedures next time? And what else can we do as a team to overcome such challenges? And that creates that learning loop as a team. That's really important as well.
That's brilliant. Thank you, Julian. Thank you for sharing your wisdom. And I love the three R's, reduce, regulate and repair, and how they tie in with building psychological safety, revisiting purpose, and having a process which we can use and help us to learn. For people who would like to learn more about you, Julian, and all the work that you do and might be looking to work with you, how best for them to contact you?
Well, you can catch me on LinkedIn, type in my name, Julian Roberts, and look for a bearded guy and you'll hopefully see me there. Or you can go to my website, which is www.julianrobertsconsulting.com.
And of course, there's your wonderful podcast.
There is, yes. Helping Organisations Thrive. So yeah, do have a look at that as well.
Fantastic. Thank you, Julian. Thank you so much for sharing your insights, your thoughts and your reflections on resilience and how to develop a resilient mindset, how to create a learning loop and to really reflect and work together on helping each other thrive. Thank you.
Thank you, Annie. Loved it. Really enjoyed the conversation. Much appreciated.
Likewise. Well, thank you. And to you, the listener, do listen to Julian's podcast, Helping Organisations Thrive. If you'd like to listen to more Leaders in Conversation, do so via my website, annietownend.com. I'd like not only to thank you again, Julian, but also to thank my support team, the Conscious Marketing Group, and Coco O'Brien, who produces my podcast and created the wonderful intro and outro music. Contact me, as mentioned, do go to my website, email me on annie@annietownend.com, find me on LinkedIn, and thank you for listening. Thank you again, Julian.
Thank you.